Now for the financial crisis in journalism. The advertising dollars that underwrote that enterprise for most of its history are spread too thinly among the infinite supply of content, driving prices of ads and publisher revenue down, down, down. The once obscenely profitable classified category has been Craigslisted to almost zero. Meanwhile, the audience fragmentation that drives down ad prices also drives down circulation revenue. Then comes the cost cutting, which diminishes the content, which diminishes the audience, which diminishes the revenue, and so on into oblivion. Mind you, this isn't cable TV or music we're discussing now. It's journalism. And so, fearing for the loss of something so critical to our very democracy, we were obliged to ask, is there anyone making money out there? The New York Times is profitable, but at nowhere near the levels of yesteryear, and is losing ground all the time. Business newspapers that offer actionable information, the Wall Street Journal and the Financial Times, have succeeded with digital subscriptions, also known as paywalls, but they don't pay all the bills, and they take a toll on readership.
So the newspaper has not got a brilliant future.
Alan Rusbridger is the editor of The Guardian, where I'm a contributor.
So you either try and cling on to the newspaper past, or you say, we're going to have to let that go at some point.
Some have stopped clinging, monetizing themselves in ways with varying degrees of ickiness and varying degrees of editorial seriousness. Gawker, the family of websites that includes Gizmodo, Deadspin, and Jalopnik, doesn't disclose its financials but declares profitability. Likewise, BuzzFeed, which combines fluffy clickbait and some serious reporting, and likewise The Atlantic, and likewise Forbes.
Well, you know, we've had the best financial performance that we've experienced in 5 years.
Mike Perlis is the president and CEO of Forbes Media.
Our top line revenues year over year are up 10%, and our profitability is up about the same amount, 10%. We've grown dramatically in digital revenue. Forbes.com is growing very, very rapidly, as you know, and revenues in that area up 19%.
The first part of the equation was reducing paid staff and building a HuffPost-type stable of 1,000 bloggers who coalesce audiences for their analysis and expertise, despite the fact that the vast majority of them aren't professional journalists. The second part of the equation was doing what readers do all the time, looking past the banner ad.
We do e-newsletters. We do e-books. We're embarking on an education, online education program. Many, many things that carry the Forbes name. 30 international local language editions of Forbes and corresponding websites.
On its pages, Forbes is one of many publications to embrace advertorials, or as they're now known, native advertising. That's where brands pay for the privilege of creating their own content that runs side by side with the actual journalism.
They work through the business department, but they create their own very transparently marked, clearly marked as an advertiser's page, as a marketer's page. It's meant for thought leadership, not for selling, not for pricing, but for a marketer to find a way to become a content producer.
The juxtaposition of editorial content with advertorial is not new. Newspaper readers have long seen pull-out sections jammed with stories extolling, for example, Russia, but always with a different typeface and layout style so there can be no reader confusion. Now, sponsored content shows up on everything from Twitter to the Washington Post, and some publishers do better than others in clearly identifying the stuff as advertising. On the Media and many other critics slammed TheAtlantic.com this winter for running a so-called native advertising feature on the Church of Scientology almost indistinguishable from the surrounding journalism. Atlantic President M. Scott Havens owns up to the mistake.
We've learned a lot. We went public with our apology as well as some guidelines, and we've put in a lot of processes since then that we think are industry-leading and public-facing, and we're not shying away from it. We just want to do it the right way.
Common practice now is to have the publisher's marketing department create those items and add the word sponsored in the tags that categorize the post. But then there are publications such as Business Insider, which, as revealed by Columbia Journalism Review, uses its, quote, content producers to write sponsored posts, quote, in our own voice and style. We also write and produce original content that aligns with the advertiser's marketing goals and themes, end quote. Hello, Mr. Fox. Welcome to the hen house. A dull-witted cousin of native advertising is the From Around the Web links often displayed in a series of thumbnails with provocative headlines of the Tulsa Mom Finds Weird Trick for Growing Hair variety. The resulting article is, of course, an ad. Nobody actually declares these things linked to news, but nobody says they don't. Which is why Erin Pettigrew, head of business development at Gawker Media, says her titles don't go in for such shenanigans because, ew.
Not good quality content, and it's not something we need to be pushing our audience to. That type of revenue isn't interesting to us.
But Gawker is interested in links. It's one of several publishers, including our home station WNYC, dipping their toes into affiliate marketing, which means hyperlinking product mentions to e-tailers such as Amazon for a piece of the action in any ensuing purchase. Assuming editorial decisions aren't made with affiliate revenue in mind, it's a benign practice. In Gawker's case, marketing employees actually create articles to showcase brands, a catalogization of editorial that fashion and lifestyle magazines have done forever, but which till now has been an ethical red line for newspapers. Fear not, says Pettigrew. It's a service to readers.
The commerce content is about us showing great products that you might want to buy, but not pushing things that are sort of out of bounds. So there's actually quite a lot of corollary authenticity in the editorial and sort of the commercial sides of the business.
Authenticity, ethics, scalability, those were all subjects of a recent conference about new revenue streams for content producers, which was oddly self-fulfilling because it turns out that one of the most lucrative ways to monetize journalism is to branch off of journalism with conferences, fetching large registration fees and sponsorship dollars. Paul Walborski is CEO of Paid Content's parent company, GigaOM, which hosted the conference.
We said, look, you know, if we're going to make money out of this business and be able to have great editorial, we're going to have to support in a different way.
Forbes does it too. Atlantic does it too. The New York Times does it too. My colleagues at MediaPost do it too. All right, I've left something out. One of the most promising revenue models for journalistic content is the most basic. You might call it proto-crowdsourcing. I call it asking for money. Public broadcasting is no longer alone in soliciting donations from the audience and from foundations and businesses. The Texas Tribune, a website that offers in-depth coverage of Texas government and society with no fluff, advertorials, or commercial hyperlinks, is doing just fine.
We've been able to raise money from major national foundations as well as state and local foundations and family foundations.
Texas Tribune CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith says that the 3.5-year-old publication is better than breaking even and will be in the black for the foreseeable future.
There's endless opportunity for us to grow. We have more millionaires and billionaires in Texas than any other state. All of them understand that the kind of work we're doing results in a more thoughtful, engaged, and productive citizenry.
ProPublica, the New York-based nonprofit dedicated to investigative journalism, raised more than $10 million in 2012 to fund a staff of 40. President Richard Tafel compares his Pulitzer Prize-winning organization to the local symphony orchestra.
You know, there was a time when classical music, what we now think of classical music, was popular music. And at that time, it was funded in more or less as popular music would be today. That's no longer the case. And I think that they are coming to recognize the same thing about some kinds of journalism.
Splendid analogy, but assuming a finite amount of charitable resources, doesn't that pit ProPublica and the Texas Tribune and other nonprofits against NPR and PBS and every ballet company and symphony in the world? Tafel's not worried about that.
An FCC staff report last year pointed out that if 1% of all the philanthropy in the country were directed to public media, that would pay for all the public television stations and all of the programming on them, all of the public radio stations and all of the programming on them, and 100 news organizations the size of ProPublica. We're nowhere near that yet, but I think that gives you some sense of what might be possible.
Tithing, advertising, advertorial, affiliate marketing, paywalls, conferences, emails, newsletters, education, none of those sources alone will underwrite journalism, and no combination of them is a guarantee for any publisher. As Pam Horan, president of the Online Publishers Association, observes,
I don't think there's a silver bullet here.
Nor white knight, nor magic beans, nor cavalry, nor alchemy turning lead into gold. All there is experimentation, determination, and a whole lot of blind hope.
The pragmatist and poet George Santayana once observed that chaos is a name for any order that produces confusion in our minds. It won't be chaos once we see it for what it is. None of this necessarily portends the end of anything, though it does presage a lot of new beginnings. It's just that in this age of infinite options, our role as consumers expands. Because if you really look at it, we've been paying the whole time, just not for what we really want.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Jamie York, PJ Vogt, Alex Goldman, Sara Abdurkhman, Chris Neary, and Doug Anderson. We had more help from Ravenna Koenig and Alexandra Hall, and the show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Kenny Feldman.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news and our boss. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Jane Marcher Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.